Since 1936, the National Wildlife Federation has worked with hunters and anglers to pass the most important conservation laws in American history and to protect our sporting traditions. This podcast explores our history, our values, and the work we do to safeguard the fish and wildlife that fuel our passions. We are NWF Outdoors.
The NWF Outdoors Podcast is brought to you by Hunt to Eat, an inclusive hunting apparel company with a focus on community, real food, and conservation. Check out Hunt to Eat's NWF line, wild game recipes, and hunting and fishing designs at hunttoeat.com, and enter the code WILDLIFE10 to get 10% off your order.
All right, welcome to the NWF Outdoors Podcast today. My name is Aaron Kindle. I'm your host, along with my co-host, Drew Youngdyke. Today, we are bringing you a very special edition. We have the privilege of having two CEOs of two of the leading conservation organizations in the United States on today. Our CEO, Colin O'Mara, from the National Wildlife Federation, and the CEO of the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation, Jeff Crane. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to give a quick bio of these two fellas, and then we're going to do our traditional start where we ask what everybody's been up to outside, because, of course, this is the NWF Outdoors Podcast, and we like to talk about what people are up to out in the woods. So first, we'll start with Colin. Colin is the president and CEO of the National Wildlife Federation, the largest conservation organization in America with 52 state and territorial affiliates. We represent about 6 million hunters, birders, anglers, gardeners, hikers, all kinds of folks. And Colin has served on things like the Hunting and Shooting Sports Council. He is the former lead of the Delaware Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Council from about 2009 to 2014. He's done all kinds of amazing conservation work across the country for many years. We're lucky to have him. Mr. Jeff Crane is the president of the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation. He's been working in conservation for about 40 years. He's a lifelong outdoorsman. He's been really incredible on a lot of our issues that we've been working on. He's worked a lot with the National Assembly of Sportsmen's Caucuses, the Congressional Sportsmen's Caucus. He's been the chairman of the Hunting and Shooting Sports Conservation Council. He's worked all across the legislature with many leaders. He's a Boone and Crockett member and a member of the Government Affairs Committee of the Safari Club. Just really varied background, and we're lucky to have both of you. Thanks for joining.
Again, thanks. Appreciate it.
One of the things we wanted to bring them on today for is to talk about the work that the two organizations have been doing together, which is really kind of a unique memorandum of understanding in ways that we've worked together on different issues. And that working together has actually resulted in a recent award from the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. Aaron, what was that award all about real quick? We'll get to that later in the episode as well.
Sure, and I'm going to do something, as I told these guys before we started, that I would never normally do. I'm going to read just a handful of sentences because I think the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies summed this up as good as anybody could. And I'll start here, and people will understand it very well after this. I quote, "No two individuals have been more instrumental in mustering support for the Recovering America's Wildlife Act than Colin O'Mara, President and CEO of National Wildlife Federation, and Jeff Crane, President of the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation. To most in the professional conservation arena, the Recovering America's Wildlife Act represents the most significant and ambitious policy objective in a generation. NWF, under Colin O'Mara's leadership, maintains one of the most diverse affiliate networks in the conservation community, from traditional stakeholders in the hunting and fishing communities to birders and environmental organizations. NWF has leveraged their organizational strength to bring a ready-made, diverse coalition able to tell the story of Rawa from each of their unique lenses. And then for nearly 20 years, Jeff Crane has been at the helm of the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation. Despite many political headwinds and a largely divided government, Jeff has been a champion for building and guiding bipartisan support for a number of important conservation policies with respect to Rawa. Jeff has again proven himself a master coalition builder, working with his staff to help secure vital support among members of Congress." So that ought to give you a good overview of of why folks decided to nominate these two gentlemen, and we'll dive in here. So first, we really wanted to talk just about our organizational histories. Obviously, when we bring on the leaders of two different organizations, we like to hear what they're all about, how they got started, what they're working on. And let's start with you, Jeff. Can you just give us a little overview of the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation and how it got started and what it aims to do?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So it came about in 1989. When a bipartisan group of congressmen decided to create a bipartisan Congressional Sportsman's Caucus. And as we know, there are caucuses all over the Hill for all kinds of myriad of causes and just self-identifying, but there was no such thing as a Sportsman's Caucus. They quickly realized that to be really an effective caucus, they needed a liaison between the greater outside conservation sportsman's world and the caucus, and the foundation was born. And really, for the first probably 15 years, our sole focus was working with this bipartisan caucus. In the interim, now 30 plus years, it's grown to the largest, most active bipartisan caucus with leadership in the House and Senate, and they really are truly champions of stuff that that we care about as hunters and anglers and as conservationists. And if I can just segue for a half a minute, then in 2004, realizing that a lot of the wildlife management decisions were being made at the state level, having no parallel kind of a network, we launched something called the National Assembly of Sportsmen's Caucuses, to create a network, an umbrella organization to capture all these state caucuses and have state caucuses in all 50 states now. And then finally, the kind of third leg of the stool was a bipartisan governor's caucus, which was launched in 2009. And we're now up to 27 of the 50 sitting governors that sit in that. And key thing, bipartisan, because conservation is not a partisan issue. And to get things done, we got to find that good middle ground. And so, yeah, I'm really fortunate. As you introduced me, I'm an avid sportsman. You can see a few of my taxidermy things here. I love to be outside. And so it's a great opportunity to work on something I passionately care about. So a little long-winded, but I hope that covers it for you guys.
That was great, Jeff. And I've had the pleasure during my career to be able to attend some of your state caucus, Sportsman's Caucus events in Michigan. And actually this morning, I was actually on a panel where one of the Michigan state representatives, for the state of Michigan, not the university, was on that same panel. We were talking about the economics of hunting in Michigan and what it contributes to the economy. And she didn't grow up as a hunter or an angler. And she said on that panel that the Sportsman's Caucus is her absolute favorite of all the ones that she participates in. It introduced her to hunting and fishing. She told a story about learning how to duck hunt, and that was through the caucus events. It really made a convert of her toward hunting and fishing. And I think it was just a great perspective on what the caucus can do, you know, at least at the state level.
We're very pleased, and we've got a network, as you know, Drew, we've got a network of staff scattered around the country to take advantage of being geographically located in strategically around the country. And so we do try to educate them. We absolutely try to introduce them to shooting, fishing, hunting, things like that. And that's a great story, and I'll make sure that Nick and who covers things is aware that he got a shout out in it, sort of by association. So,
well, and that's excellent. And I so appreciate our partnership with you, Jeff. I've worked with many of your staff across the country on various different things. I've attended your yearly event and spoken a time or two, and just really excited every time. There's a lot of good stuff going on, a lot of good work happening. And I do want to say, because unfortunately, I neglected our longstanding tradition at first. So let's give you a quick chance to tell us what you've been doing outside, Jeff, and then we'll jump over to Colin and let him dive into NWF's history.
So September's been a little mixed here. We've had a lot of rain here. Shot a few doves. The most fun part about that is I've got a 14-year-old dog that I was wondering whether I was going to get him back out again. And he's a little slow, but he got to pick up a couple of doves, so that was awesome. Spent a rainy afternoon last Saturday sitting in a deer stand and watching mosquitoes. Thank God for thermocells. But it's cooling down. October's here. I'm hoping to really get into it. So, but my favorite time of year. This is perfect as fall starts to set up. So, yep, I'll be out. Count on it.
Excellent. Well, let's switch over to Colin. Colin, tell us first what you've been doing outside, and then dive in a little bit on NWF's history and our sporting history, if you would, please.
I appreciate that, and it's great to be with all of you, and great to be with Jeff as always. The so I got my 3-year-old and my 8-year-old. I'm kind of keeping track of them all the time outdoors. So, a few less hours, in the blinds and stands, and a little more time, trying to teach them to fish. But the we've been out a lot this year. Been out, in Delaware. A lot of the seasons start a little later, and I'm I hadn't been out hunting a few times before this job. But Jeff's mentorship and some others kind of more into it, over the last few years. And, teal season starts in a few weeks and, in Delaware, and then, deer season starts a little bit after that. So I'd like to try to get out. I'm not sure if my wife's going to let me kind of sneak away for a couple of days to do it right. And not just, a little bit of weekend warrior or, a few hours before work or a few hours after work, kind of like a lot of our friends do. But, I've learned a lot. I think this is where having a great authentic partnerships where, Jeff's been kind of a mentor, not just on the policy side, but also, becoming a better shot. Things that, I had a little bit of training growing up, but cutting out away from it and kind of getting back into it now. And I think that's a good segue to the Federation's history a little bit, which was, in 1936, actually, let me go start in 1935, President Roosevelt commissioned a report about the state of wildlife in the country. And it was and he asked Ding Darling, Thomas Beck, and Aldo Leopold to put it together. And the report, basically said that, wildlife populations were in trouble, that we needed a dedicated source of funding, that there should be much more professional management, and having wildlife biologists making decisions around resource management, not politicians. And there had to be a lot more education, and that as the Depression was in its depths, that we were, destroying the soils on the plain, we were cutting things down, cutting down trees in some of the kind of second growth forests, wetlands were being decimated, and that we needed a concerted effort. And so at the end of that process, Ding Darling, our founder, said, look, it's not enough just to have a report. We should actually hold a conference. We should bring people together across the country, talk about how we're going to implement the recommendations so they don't just collect dust on the shelf. And that was kind of the first North American Wildlife Conference at the Mayflower Hotel in 1936. More than 1,000 people took trains and buggies from all across the country to attend, folks from all 50 states, folks from provinces in Canada, folks from Mexico. And the cool thing about that gathering is that the sportsman organizations were in the lead, and Boone and Crockett Club was obviously a huge player, is one of the kind of the oldest of the sportsman groups. But you had young state wildlife federations, or just kind of fairly ragtag collection at the time. You had giants like giants like Leopold and others that were there, as well as you had the early ornithological societies, early Audubon chapters. Some of the 4-H clubs were there, some of the garden clubs. It was kind of this interesting coalition of folks that all cared about the kind of the rapid deterioration of the natural world and the habitat and the devastation to the habitat that so many species depend upon. And at the end of that 3-day session, they actually took a vote to not just have it be a 1-day thing, but to actually organize as the National Wildlife Federation. And it was first the General Wildlife Federation, then became the National Wildlife Federation a year later. At that same meeting, the Wildlife Society was formed. The idea was to have a professional society of these budding numbers of wildlife biologists across the country. There's some other things that kind of came out of that, but the first piece of advocacy that the National Wildlife Federation and the state affiliates and all these partners really focused on was the legislation that became Pittman-Robertson. And the idea was to take an existing excise tax on munitions and firearms and then actually apply that to wildlife conservation. That 10%, 11% tax that still is one of the most important kind of sources of wildlife habitat funding in the entire country, entire world for that matter today. And so 18 months later, after this conference, wildlife restoration program is created. And from that point, all of a sudden you see this fairly rapid recovery of most game birds and server populations across the country. And that was all kind of coming out of this. 15 years later, Dingell Johnson passes, similar coalition, and then going through in the 1960s, trying to bring more resources for things like the Land and Water Conservation Fund, the Wilderness Act, those kind of things. I think the movement got a little kind of focused more on regulation in the 60s and 70s. And so you see the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, things like that. And I think one of the things the federations always try to do is bring together, the traditional sportsman community with some of the greener elements and show that we have a lot more in common. And so today, I mean, trying to be a bridge that can bring together just incredible numbers of folks that care deeply, maybe for different reasons. Some folks because they, want to make sure there's enough, ducks to hit their limit, and other folks are, thinking about environmental justice or climate, but showing that there's a whole lot that we can agree upon. And frankly, if we take care of, we all do better, and trying to break through some of the political nonsense as a way to make progress for the resources we all care about.
So we fast forwarded from 1936 to, through the 60s and 70s and to today. Just a couple years ago, our two organizations actually entered into a formal memorandum of understanding to work together. What was that about, and how did that memorandum come about?
I'll start, and Colin can correct me on where I may take the liberties on it, but I think it preceded that a little bit when Colin was hired to take over his current role at NWF. I got to meet him, and I was impressed with his vision and his ability to want to see things get done. I think there are, unfortunately, a few people that like to talk about stuff and other people that like to talk about it and then make things happen. And I was impressed by that. And so got to know Colin. We worked to get Colin and National Wildlife Federation involved with the American Wildlife Conservation Partners. And through that process realized, well, this is a gigantic organization with far reaching tentacles into all the states and territories with all of your guys' state affiliates, some of whom we already work with in a big way. And it just seemed as a natural progression from our side. We're working on the same things, and there are things that we don't necessarily work on, and we agree, okay, you go this way, we'll go that way, or we won't touch it, you guys do it, or vice versa. But there was enough common ground to realize that we were working on a lot of things together, that it just seemed to make sense to kind of formalize this, let everybody know that we were really committed to this partnership and to the idea that by publicly committing to this, that we could make ourselves stronger working together. And that's kind of my take. And so I guess in a long way short, it started with just getting to know Colin and from my side, and then watching where the direction he was taking NWF, and then it just, as we start to work on policies together here in Congress, and the Covering America's Wildlife was coming along, we were already doing that, it just made sense to me. So I don't know, Colin, you might want to amplify that or correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate it's very, very kind the way you said it. I think, like, when I first came in, I think the Federation at the national level, at least especially in the DC operation, had, fallen a little bit afield from a lot of our sportsman partners. A lot of the huge strength and kind of our history was so grounded in our outdoor heritage and hunting and fishing traditions that I felt like we were missing a big part of the power that was needed to do big things. And that, very early, I was kind of blessed to meet Jeff and a few others that were just incredibly generous, kind of welcoming us back in. Because, I mean, we hadn't been part of those conversations at the national level, at the CEO level, in 30 years, basically, maybe 35 years. And it was a couple things. It was the work of the American Wildlife Conservation Partners, and Jeff kind of vouching for me, and a few other folks, Steve Williams and a few others, Dale Hall as well, and then also the work together in the Blue Ribbon Panel, which I'm sure we'll get to later. But I think the thing that I just love about working with Jeff and the Congressional Sportsman Foundation is that it's a group that just finds a way to get things done, right? Like, they don't have like partisanship or like, you know, I don't know. So many folks get distracted, right, by like shiny objects or like allow like one bump in the road to kind of derail entire operation. And I think what I wanted to do is, I mean, I probably talked to Jeff more than any other CEO that I talked to, which probably would come surprising to a lot of folks, you know, but I think we're in it, right? Our groups are in it. And the reason when Jeff suggested the MOU and had the kind of the types of partnerships he had with other organizations, I got excited because I wanted to move past the relationship that just he and I have towards a relationship across our organizations where, you know, his organizers and, you know, or, you know, Andy or the guys, you know, out west are connecting with folks there, or, you know, the DC teams or the state caucuses, and really kind of knit our organizations together, because you combine, you know, great work by state affiliates with great state caucuses with strong leadership and governors, and all of a sudden now we're not just passing bills in DC. All of a sudden now you're moving legislation in all 50 state capitals. And so one of my goals is to make sure that this partnership is so strong that, you know, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, that like the partnership between the Federation and CSF is going to endure for, you know, for generations. Because I do think that like the more that we're working together, the better it is for everybody on the conservation front.
Thanks, Colin. You reminded me, last time I saw Andy Trahearne, he called me out of the blue and said, "Hey, I'm coming through your town. What are you doing? You want to go fishing?" And I only answered because I was on a boat and I thought my wife was calling. And it wasn't her, it was him. And I said, "Well, hey, we're on a boat and we're right here. Where are you?" And he happened to be about 10 minutes away. So he pulled into the parking lot and we picked him up on the boat and we kept floating and kept fishing. So it was perfect.
Thanks for doing that. I'm sure he appreciated that.
Yeah. It was
pretty
great.
Logged as a work day too.
Yeah, I'm sure they did, which is fine.
Let's jump a little to what it looks like when we partner together. You know, some of the things we do on the Hill, you know, working in state legislatures with our different affiliates, you know, maybe Jeff, you can kick us off, you know, how it kind of the mechanics of what it takes to bring together a lot of different diverse interests and get things done on the Hill, and how we do that kind of thing together, you know, back on Capitol Hill.
So I think Colin really hit it in this little segment he just talked about, was trying to figure out how do we leverage these caucuses, you know, and how do we give them the real support that they need to take on some of these harder issues, because it's easy for them to stand there and pass, you know, proclamations or resolutions that don't do anything. But when we're asking them to take stuff that includes money and things like that, then the stronger that bipartisan effort is to really leverage the power from their communities. And that's really where, again, this partnership with that Colin eloquently described with the NWF really comes to bear, because you guys are well represented in every single state around the country with your affiliates and just your massive numbers. And through Colin's leadership and a great staff there, you know, you're able to translate that into some real pressure. And so not only are we working sort of at the grass tops inside the Beltway with Mike Clay and other folks and Laura and folks on Colin's team, but then the grassroots stuff that you guys can bring to bear, and it's obviously paying dividends. And so we've got, you know, we do not have a member. We're not a membership-based organization. Our members are members of the caucus in Washington, the Congressional Caucus, and then the state caucuses that we talked about, and our partners. And so we really are, you know, inside the political belt, if you will, as opposed to being able to really leverage that support from the community. We try to do it through some of our board members that are representing companies and stuff, but this kind of relationship with NWF is really critical to you know, tag team and to bring pressure from inside and from back home, basically.
Yeah, and from my point of view, I think Jeff's just and his team's been incredibly generous, you know, providing opportunities for us to, you know, spotlight issues. You know, there's nothing better on the Hill than when we can show up together and basically say, you know, whether it's on, you know, Recovering America's Wildlife Act or CWD or on, you know, issues around funding or, you know, it's a lot of the state level issues. I mean, the number of, you know, Federation, you know, staff or affiliate leaders that have been, you know, presenters at the national conference that Jeff puts on with the state legislators or, you know, and it's just showing the connectivity, right? And I think We're in a pretty polarized environment right now, right? And then I think, you know, a lot of times we're kind of seen as a kind of slightly, maybe a little more center left, and Jeff's seen as a little more center right. But when we're together, right, it kind of gives that clear signal, right, that we are united, and that there's no political risk to leaning into the issues, you know. And I think, you know, and I think Jeff's ability to navigate the current environment has just been amazing, right? Because I mean, like the challenges right now, like most folks feel like you have to, you know, kind of be on a side, right? And I think showing that conservation can be bipartisan, showing that there are folks that, you know, again, may not agree on absolutely everything, but agree on 80-90%, and that they're willing to kind of get things done, is one of the reasons why we've had these huge victories. I mean, just, and I know we'll get to some of this, but like, I mean, just in the 5 years that we've been working close with CSF, right, you got, you know, a huge the fire fix got done, huge public lands package got done, the Great American Outdoors Act, ASAC's going to move, we'll talk about that later. I mean, in the Obama administration, we helped fix a whole bunch of monuments to make sure that like hunting and fishing was still allowed on those things. There were issues around, you know, appropriations and some, you know, some pieces around like water projects and stuff. And so like the it's not theory, right? Like it actually resulted in real work. And like, and a lot of folks that, you know, back home, you know, across the country aren't going to know our names, maybe not even know our organizations, but they're benefiting from the progress that we've made because of this, you know, kind of partnership that's allowed us to, you know, shed a lot of the partisan sheen that too often, you know, makes other issues, you know, stuck right now in this environment.
Well, particularly with a divided government where you have one party controlling the House, you have one party controlling the Senate, and man, we got the Great American Outdoors Act done in a divided government because you work together. You mentioned the ACE Act. Let's dive into that right now. That is on the verge of passing. What is the ACE Act? Why is it important for conservation? And why is our two organizations working together able to move that?
Oh, and I've started. You want to start on this one, and I can.
Sure. I mean, well, actually, I mean, I feel like Jeff, you've been leading on the sportsman bill for. I feel like this is the remnants of the sportsman bill.
It is, you know, parts of it, and so after offering it, now I'm taking it back from him. But basically, it's again a bit of a catch-all authorization bill. Importantly for sportsmen, it includes NACA reauthorization at $60 million for 5 years. It includes money for a CWD task force, multi-agency task force that's really important, as we know. It authorizes the National Fish Habitat Partnership for 5 years, and then something near and dear to me and Colin, because I live right near the Chesapeake Bay, is there's considerable funding for Chesapeake Bay program and which is the largest estuary in the United States. And so it is a bit of a catch-all, all important pieces of funding. It should be a fairly easy thing to get done, especially after we did the Great American Outdoors Act, which you know, was a huge price tag compared to this. But as all things in Congress, gotten out of the Senate on a unanimous consent vote back in January. The House had some issues with some of the language. We were running out of time. We had to renegotiate back to the Senate, working really closely with Colin and his team. We're working both sides of the aisle on this, and got our champions to get it through the Senate again. And now it's sitting in a procedural vote that hopefully will go well this afternoon and we'll get out of Congress, and every indication is that President Trump will sign it. So, sorry, Colin, I kind of offered it and took it back.
No, I think that's right, and I think the look. I mean, it's interesting the number of things that have like real substance behind them that have moved in this Congress is actually pretty few, right? And like three of the biggest ones all are in conservation. And the fact that the bar for this to kind of have it get through the Senate was actually getting it unanimous is quite an amazing thing, right? So, I mean, this is a bill that, you know, everyone from Bernie Sanders to, like, you know, Mike Lee had to sign off on to allow it to go to the floor. And I just can't say it enough. So John Barrasso, who's the chair of the Natural Resources Committee, or the Environment and Public Works Committee in the Senate, working with Tom Carper from Delaware, putting together the package. Martin Heinrich did a hell of a job, you know, yep. Kind of one of our big champions. Just, you know, playing a little whack-a-mole to make sure nobody stood in the way. But the thing I love about the ACE Act is that people of goodwill were willing to kind of put enough effort behind it to get it done, right? This is a bill that easily could have died, right? Like, there's a million other things going on. There's, you know, there's all kinds of competing needs. The acrimony is pretty high right now. But, you know, folks had issues. They raised them. And again, I'll say I'm usually the optimistic one. I mean, I didn't think when the House started talking about changes to the bill, there'd be a chance to get it back to the Senate. The fact that the senators were willing to entertain those three or four changes, they're all pretty minor, but there's still, you know, still another round of process. I think it's just a huge sign that conservation is not just good policy, it's also just great politics. And when you have that combination, that's where, you know, things can still get done. But, you know, this is a pretty substantial thing. I mean, folks that love to duck hunt, you know, getting NACA reauthorized, so we're not fighting over it every year and not begging for money, is a big deal, right? I mean, DU and some of our other partners have been working on this for years. And, and, you know, got up to like the 2-yard line a bunch of times and kind of stopped in goal line stands or snatched out of one deal. And so it's something that folks can be proud of. And so I encourage folks, you know, they won't get a lot of headlines, you know, given everything else that's going on. But, you know, it's another big deal, and it's going to help folks in the field across the country enjoy their resources a little bit more.
And it just one last comment on it. I mean, there were some senators, we'll leave them nameless, but that did put holds on this. And it took, as Colin said, work from us, but more importantly, work from these champions inside the Senate that we identify them as members of the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus, but they're just champions for conservation in general that really had to go in there and lean on guys to say, please, because all it would have taken is one objection and this thing would have been in the ditch and there wouldn't have been time to pull it back out. And so it is significant in a lot of levels in terms of getting this passed. And I could say we're fairly confident it'll get out of the House this afternoon.
Thanks, Jeff. And just real quick, some alphabet soup. The ACE Act is the America's Conservation Enhancement Act. We throw around a lot of acronyms. We play inside baseball a lot. I want to ask one other question, too, especially about NACA. NACA has been amazing and critical for so many years, and I want folks to know about that a little bit more. So if one of you wouldn't mind, just give us a broad overview about that, because I, you know, the wetlands' disproportionate importance to wildlife and to every part of our country, out west here especially, you know, there's all kinds of numbers thrown around. 80% of wildlife relies on, you know, 2% of the wetted landscape. Just talk about that a little bit more, especially for our waterfowl hunters and others who you know, wildlife enthusiasts who care about those critters that rely on that. That one, I think, is more important than we think at times. And I don't know if everybody understands the depth of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in. I mean, I think like 30 years ago, and I give, you know, President George H.W. Bush a ton of credit. He did two big things on wetlands. He had adopted a national policy around no net loss, sending a signal that wetlands matter. They're not just to be drained for, you know, either drainage or have less mosquitoes. And they passed NACA. And the North American Wetlands Conservation Act, you know, gets $50, $60 million a year that's leveraged several times over to help conserve and restore wetlands across the country. And, you know, my home state of Delaware, we use it all the time. Probably get a disproportionate amount given the importance of the habitat there. But, you know, that combined with the money from the duck stamp are the primary funders of, you know, wetland conservation country in this country. And the success is phenomenal. I mean, if you look at duck population numbers in the 1970s, you know, they've gone up by 56%. Kind of waterfowl as a whole have gone about 56% in that period. Overall, if you look at, you know, kind of bird populations overall, bird populations are down about 30-40% over that same time period, about, you know, down about 29%, about 3 billion birds down. And so waterfowl is way up because of, you know, this type of work, because of the contributions of sportsmen with duck stamps, because they're dedicated investment. And if anything, one of the things that I'm always kind of working on with Jeff and with others is how do we replicate that model? Because if you, you know, for example, like we should have a NACA for grasslands, and there's some proposals that we're working on right now. But if you had the same kind of incentive 30 years ago, you wouldn't have the decline that we're seeing of a bunch of grassland birds that we're having, because we just haven't made the investments. I mean, other than CRP and a couple other small tools in the farm bill, there's nothing that's equivalent. So it's like, where we invest, you know, kind of, if you build it, they will come. Like if you make these investments, the return is amazing. And now it's one of the greatest successes, just because it's a non-regulatory voluntary program. Everybody loves it. And the results are spectacular, and they're demonstrable, and they're, frankly, it's something we could do more of in other areas.
Well, thanks, speaking Colin. Of making investments, if you build it, the wildlife will come. let's talk about the Recovering America's Wildlife Act, which is seeking to do a similar thing, really, for those other birds that are down by 30%, as well as lots of other wildlife. And of course, as we know, habitat is habitat, and when you do something for non-game species, game species are going to benefit from that as well. But what is the Recovering America's Wildlife Act? How did it come about, and where is it now?
I'll tell you what, I'll start with a little bit of the history, because this is also part of Colin's and my friendship. So both Colin and I sat on a blue ribbon panel that was created by the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. It was chaired by former Wyoming Governor Dave Freudenthal and Bass Pro Shops founder Johnny Morris. And we met for a couple of days on the idea of what are we going to do about, you know, getting more funding to the state agencies, in particular to look at species of greatest conservation concern. Our task was to float all the different options, more taxes like the Pittman-Robertson, Dingell-Johnson taxes on equipment, and looked at a bunch of things. And the consensus out of the panel was that we had to get bold, we had to get big, we had to get it now. Originally, the idea was to take some of the royalties off of energy, both onshore and offshore, that were coming on public lands and public waters, and redirect some of that existing revenue stream. So we weren't going to be goring anybody else's cow that was going into the treasury, and redirect it back for this sole purpose. Use the Pittman-Robertson account that was set up already and direct it, and then apportion it back on a formula. I think the idea was well received, and I remember Dave Freudenthal in particular, who was the more boisterous of the two co-chairs, basically tapped me on the shoulder and said, "I'm making you the chair of our legislative policy committee." And I asked him, I said, "Do I have any say in this?" He goes, "No, you." And I said, "Okay, then one proviso, I get to pick a co-chair to go with me." And he said, "Pick away." And so I did pretty much the same thing. Colin, of course, said yes. And he and I basically, thanks to Dave Freudenthal putting a big arm around me and him, just sort of said, "You guys do this." And so that's where the beginning of the idea of raw law as a formal legislative idea came out of. And to this day, Colin and I, but I got to really give more credit to it, to certainly my staff and his staff, in terms of really being down in the weeds, meeting weekly, and the alliance that has been created to support this effort. But he and I still are the co-chairs, hence the Aaron, as you mentioned at the top of the show, the recognition from AFWA for our leads on that is because of Dave Freudenthal. So with that, I'll let Colin talk a little bit more about the bill and some of the progress, but that's kind of how the world turns when you're sitting in Johnny Morris's Big Cedar Lodge and the governor just puts his arm around you and says, "Thanks for volunteering." Well, what can you say, you know?
It's funny, it was one of those moments where I feel like it was feeling like what it must have been to be like, kind of like manhandled by like Lyndon Johnson back in the day, right? Where like you're not volunteer, you're voluntold, right?
Right.
And Jeff roped me into it. I think it's the third leg of the stool, right? Like, you know, I mean, the amazing success we've had over the years with, you know, mammals and birds, particularly waterfowl, the huge success that we've had with sport fish, and obviously some more work to do there. But sorry, my 3-year-old may be joining us any second. She's gotten free. The rest of the funding for wildlife has been sporadic, right? I mean, until the 1980s, there was almost nothing. Until the early conversations around the state wildlife grants. State wildlife action plans come along, and they're great, but it's basically an unfunded mandate where, you know, states put together these phenomenal plans that are incredibly collaborative and really thoughtful across habitat types and around different threats. And then we put together these plans, and, you know, we estimate that on an average year, they're going to cost, you know, about $1.5, $1.6 billion to enact. And then we basically say, "Oh, here's $60 million," and spread it across the entire country. You know, and so we're getting, you know, cents on the dollar compared to what, you know, what the need is. And I think the reason I'm excited about the Recovering America's Wildlife Act is that it's stitching together the type of coalition that I think, you know, the National Wildlife Federation was founded with thinking, right? Like bringing together you know, the greatest sportsmen and sportswomen organizations in the country, you know, with some of the greener groups, with some of the land conservation groups, with, you know, the industries, I mean, the folks, and basically realizing that the I would argue the failing of the Endangered Species Act was that we allowed what was supposed to be a tool of last resort to become a tool in many cases of primary resort, because we haven't done the preventative work to try to prevent species from getting to the emergency room. And that a lot of litigation, a lot of regulation, a lot of frustration on the landscape that's emerged over the last 30, 40 years is because we're not kind of investing that ounce of prevention. And so instead we're getting stuck with that pound of cure, and it ends up being a pretty contentious pound of cure. So, you know, this is a way to kind of reset the model towards a more collaborative style. I mean, the state agencies have proven that they have an unbelievable track record of bringing back species, that they have resources to work on. And so it's a matter of, you know, kind of, again, and there's an evolution they'll have to go through too, as they're diversifying their staff and as they're having, you know, different skill sets, and, you know, maybe in addition to the massive number of, you know, deer and duck biologists they have, having, you know, biologists for, you know, for all species. But I think it's how we should be doing conservation in this country, right? I mean, like, you know, there are places where regulation is necessary, but that should be the last resort, you know, not the, you know, not the first term. And this can shift that. And the exciting thing about that frame is that you got Democrats that really love the idea of bringing back species and, you know, investing in resilience and really making, you know, habitat be able to endure for decades to come. You got Republicans that care deeply about species and care about the landscape and also just don't want to, you know, have regulation impacting the ability of folks to, you know, support their family and do projects and the like. And so there's this great convergence. And so I think, you know, the Blue Ribbon Panel was set up that way. We had industry together with conservation groups and others. The coalition we've built is the same thing. And then you got great leaders like Debbie Dingell, who's, you know, one of Jeff's co-chairs, and Jeff Fortenberry, who's also a member of the caucus, and, you know, guys like, you know, Martin Heinrich and Joe Manchin and Roy Blunt and Rob Portman and others that are interested. And so it's a great convergence where, just like the Great American Outdoors Act, you could have the same level of bipartisan support. And now, because of that, we were able to actually pass it through a version of it through the House of Representatives as part of an infrastructure package on a voice vote. I mean, it was unanimous, basically. There was so much support for it, or at least no organized opposition to it, that, you know, it got attached to a pretty big package. It's one of the only bipartisan parts of that package. And so I'm pretty proud of that. And I think it sets us up for hopefully a pretty good run at getting it done in the next 6 months.
I love this bill. I think, you know, most of the sportsmen and women that I know all are just general wildlife admirers, right? They like to see any kind of wildlife and, you know, have some of their most incredible experiences actually while hunting too. I once saw 4 mountain lions in one day while I was hunting. Wasn't hunting mountain lions. Was hunting elk, but that was an incredible experience that never could have happened without being a hunter and having conservation. We talk about, talk a little bit, Colin or Jeff, either of you, where is this right now? What else do we need to do to push it over the finish line? This, you know, once again, another, I keep saying once in a generation, because we got the public lands package done. We got Great American Outdoors Act. We're looking at ACE. We're looking at these huge conservation victories, which I think is a testament to our work together. In a divided government, but talk about what else we need to do to get this one over the finish line.
Well, I'll start and let Colin finish on this one, but you know, Aaron, to your point exactly, we have demonstrated time and time again that we can succeed if we work together and we paint the clear benefits to conservation and wildlife, but also to the elected officials. Why should I support this? Why should I step out? It's another over $1 billion a year bill, you know, and so we got to paint the and tell the right message to get this done. And you know, Colin made the point very clearly that you're going to pay for it now, or you're going to pay for it later. And later is usually going to be a whole lot more expensive, and nobody's going to be happy with the stuff that the courts ultimately will be the ones deciding on it. And it's just not the way to do wildlife management. And so I think we've got a lot of positive momentum. We demonstrated certainly with ASAC that you can take something and turn it around in a fairly short order if you get the right people in your corner. Our biggest challenge is there are not that many legislative days left in this Congress. And so, but we are already meeting, talking. We got a meeting tomorrow to you know, talk about pre-election, post-election strategy, and you can be sure we're going to put our best combined effort, collective effort together, and we're going to go to our champions in the House and the Senate and ask them to really help us lean in on this. And I mean, this would be the most remarkable Congress in maybe the history of the country, certainly in our lifetimes, in terms of conservation and pro sportsman's wins. And as you said, it's a divided Congress, the Republican controlled Senate and the Democrat controlled House. And that speaks volumes to how important this is and you know, the success that we've been able to garner. And we're riding a wave, so I want to try to see if we can finish riding it all the way to the beach here, you know, with the win in Rawa. So, Colin, what do you got to add?
Yeah, I think the biggest you know, request for all your listeners is just, you know, we got to keep it at a high profile. You know, I think there's a lot out there right now. I think showing how it's responsive to the moment, like, we're going to have to create, you know, help create conditions where we can support, you know, millions of jobs being created as we're trying to grow our way out of this recession that we're going to be in right now because of the pandemic. And, you know, investments in habitat, investments in implementing state wildlife action plans can create hundreds of thousands of jobs, you know, in ways that are going to help in every part of the country, you know, in every community. And I think, you know, we're you know, pretty good at talking about the biological imperative and the need for helping all these species that are in trouble and the one third of species that are at heightened risk and all of that. I think we also have to win the economic argument. And like Jeff said, you know, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to save a species when their populations are just dipping a little bit before they've cratered, right? I mean, at that point, then, you know, you're in that emergency room and it gets really expensive. And so, you know, I think it's a pretty compelling case, right? It's going to create jobs in the short term, and it's going to reduce economic uncertainty in the long term, and you're going to save all these species, and you're going to have more kind of outdoor opportunities and a stronger outdoor economy. I mean, that's a pretty good win-win-win-win. And just it's just a matter of, you know, making sure the profile is high enough that if there is a big recovery package, or if there is a, you know, an opportunity at the end of the year, or an opportunity in an infrastructure package, that there's enough folks screaming, saying, hey, this has got to be included for all these reasons. And if we do that, you know, like Jeff said, I mean, this would be, you know, an absolutely historic few years of conservation victories.
That's probably a good segue, Colin. You know, there's a few priorities that we all need to work on together that are kind of in a unique moment in history right now that we need to do. Let's talk about collectively, what are we looking at these two organizations working on together and thinking about moving forward and with the opportunities we see on the horizon here?
Yeah, I'll start with two. I think obviously recovering is front and center. We got to figure out the funding issues around wildlife diseases. The chronic wasting disease scourge is getting worse. You know, you're seeing all kinds of issues, and states as their state budgets crash. The issue's going on in Michigan right now. The issue's going on in Wisconsin. You know, if we don't get ahead of this, we could see some of the progress that we've made actually fall away, and then also not make more progress on the actual scientific advancement side, and hopefully, you know, eradicating the disease. And there's some stuff in the ASAC that moves us in that direction, but obviously not quite enough. I think there's huge opportunities through infrastructure packages to make sure that habitat restoration, investments in access are a big part of the economic recovery for this country, right? I mean, if we've learned anything during the pandemic, it's that folks are turning to nature. You know, folks that aren't particularly outdoorsy even, right, are turning to nature as a, just for exercise or sanity, or just like, you know, to kind of reconnect and just feel a little more grounded. We gotta keep that up, right? I mean, I worry that, you know, once there's a vaccine, folks will get back in their cars and, you know, get back to the rat race and everything else. And so how do we, you know, encourage folks to enjoy the outdoors, you know, and make investments that are going to, you know, create jobs, but also, you know, expand opportunities for folks. And, you know, I want all the kids that went out fishing for the first time during the pandemic because, you know, there was opportunities because their, you know, parents were around a little bit more and those kind of things. How do we make sure that's not just a blip in time, but that's really just a change in the way that we, you know, we enjoy our incredible natural resources. And I want to make sure that that's, you know, not lost. So I think there's big opportunities. I mean, Jeff, you've been doing a ton of stuff on the fishery side and, like, you know, some of these policy things that haven't quite gotten done yet, but there seems to be some big opportunities to you know, create the kind of world that we want.
And yeah, 100% on that. And let's not forget, you know, it was great to get the president to sign the Great American Outdoors Act. There is nearly $10 billion of funding that's going to be sitting out there We are already engaged along with NWF and others to really make sure that there's a voice at the table for how that money is going to be spent. And the same thing with the LWCF component of that. Importantly in that, for the sportsman's community, there's the Making Public Lands Public component of that that sets aside $15 million a year for access-only projects to try to create more access and opportunity, physical access, and opportunity to get into some of those landlocked lands. I mean, these are the kinds of things we deliver these collectively as a community to our fellow sportsmen and women. They're going to really feel the difference on this kind of stuff. So it's great to get the bill passed. Now it's the due diligence to make sure that that funding actually hits the priority projects, does the most good for wildlife and for our ability to enjoy it. And we're heavily involved in that, as are you guys. And we got to keep our eye on that and really keep our pulse and our hand down on that, or you know, it's gonna waffle, you know, and we can't afford to have that happen. So,
yeah, and I think to that point, I mean, I do think that, you know, as your listeners are thinking about places that, you know, are landlocked or places that, you know, that a little bit of an investment would go a long way, or, you know, derelict, you know, facilities that just need to be upgraded. I mean, the quicker they can give voice to those places, you know, and I know that our affiliates and, you know, the Jeff State caucuses and things are beginning to build those lists, but I mean, that's going to matter, because I mean, folks are looking for where they're going to get the biggest bang for the buck, and that program's going to exist. I mean, the parks and kind of public lands part of that's going to be about 5 years. The other piece, obviously, is in perpetuity, the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
Right.
Now, and the other thing I think that Jeff and I spend a lot of time thinking about is what are the other projects that, if there is a bigger infrastructure conversation that make a big difference on the natural resource side, could be folded in. And so I think of things like, you know, coastal restoration in the Gulf, right? Obviously, you know, Duck Hunter Paradise, that, you know, we're losing the, you know, football field every, I don't know, minute or whatever it is. You know, the Brandon Road, you know, project, right? Like $700 million, not a lot of money in a multi-trillion-dollar package, but obviously trying to prevent more Asian carp from, you know, getting into the Great Lakes. You know, some of the issues around, you know, some of the fish passage in the Northwest, some of the issues around, you know, water flows in the Southwest. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that would have huge benefit to, you know, hunters and anglers across the country. If we can, you know, kind of make the right investments. And it's part of those. And frankly, again, they're all things that create jobs. They frankly create more jobs than a lot of other types of investment, because they require less equipment. They require, you know, less materials. They tend to be more labor intensive. So you actually get more kind of jobs for your buck. This is why, you know, Franklin Roosevelt invested so heavily in the Civilian Conservation Corps, you know, which we've been talking a lot about as a way to get more young folks out in the landscape doing work. But I think there's a ton of opportunities, but it's all got to be framed through how it's going to help kind of build the country back stronger, as opposed to, you know, just another spending program at the federal level.
I love the symbiosis between, you know, getting people outside, taking care of habitat, keeping people hunting and fishing. You know, at the same time, I always say habitat equals opportunity, right? So if we fix this habitat and there's more habitat near people, and at the same time, to put the country back to work and rebuild our economy, I just couldn't imagine a better setup to really do what needs done, you know, in modern conservation right now. I know we're getting towards the end of the time, gentlemen, and we want to respect your time. You're busy guys. We did want to talk real quick again, just about this AFWA award, and just, you know, we were, this one was close to us, you know, both because it was important for what it did, but also an old friend, Dan Eichinger, was the guy who nominated you.
My old boss.
Drew's old boss up in Michigan. He was a former executive director of the Michigan United Conservation Club. Just a friend of conservation. And we just want to say thank you again for the work you're doing. It's an honor to work for and with these two organizations, and to be part of the leadership that's really looking forward to the new kinds of things that we need to do to bring this country back where it needs to be, both for fish and wildlife and people and habitat. So I'll just say thank you and bid you farewell and offer the opportunity to leave us with any last parting words.
So I thank you guys for having me on the show. It's been hours flown by. So thanks. I mentioned earlier that the award recognition, while it might have Collins and my names on it. They really go to the organizations, the people that we have working with us. In my case, Andy Treharn, Taylor Schmitz in particular, really are doing the yeoman's lifting inside of here. But I look forward to building on this relationship. Greatly appreciate the friendship with Colin and a lot of the people at the National Wildlife Federation. And again, just look forward to bigger and better things. And happy hunting and good luck this fall to everybody.
Yeah, and I'll just reiterate Jeff's comment. I mean, I think, you know, we're blessed with an incredible, you know, team and Federation family and all of our affiliates that, you know, have really embraced this. And, you know, and it's, you know, I mean, I think about all the work of folks like Mike Leahy and Jill and, you know, Naomi and folks that have been carrying it day to day, but then the bigger team, right, that's been, you know, supporting it. You know, I think, like, one of the things that, you know, our community in general has been, I think, sometimes guilty of is, you know, in the past is thinking small. And, you know, kind of looking for crumbs and kind of trying to get scraps here and there. Now, under Jeff's leadership, you know, I think there's, you know, folks are thinking big, right? I mean, the Great American Outdoors Act is a big deal, right? The Recovering America's Wildlife Act is a big deal. And these are things that are transformative on the landscape. And I think that, you know, success begets success, right? I mean, this is the kind of, you know, conservation legacy that, you know, I think previous generations would be proud of, right? I mean, I think these are things that, you know, Roosevelt himself, right, or folks like Leopold would be proud of. And the fact that we're doing it in this environment and given all the other chaos is a testament just to how strong the partnerships are and how vast the potential is, and also just how much the public supports this stuff, right? And so it's just like, you know, I can't say enough about CSF as an organization, Jeff as a leader, because, you know, this in like 100 years from now, they're not going to remember our names, but they're still going to be benefiting from the stuff that we're doing right now. And that's a pretty cool legacy, and I'm just grateful to be a part of it.
Excellent way to finish up, Colin. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your time. Keep doing that excellent work, and let us know how we can help you. And happy hunting, and have a good fall and holidays following that. Take care, guys.
Thanks.
We are NWF Outdoors.